Ding. As everyone knows, on these live shows, I can't hit record and I can't do transferring and editing, so they get the little pre-stream that goes with it. Okay, I think we can try it. Hello?
Yeah. Get another little piece of paper.
All right, hit it.
Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak.
It's Sunday, January 22nd, 2012. Time for your Gitmo Nation Media Assassination, episode 376.
This is No Agenda.
Tracking the elites even when on vacation here in the diver's paradise of Bonaire, the Netherlands Antilles, just 60 clicks north of Hugo Chavez's presidential studios. In the morning, everybody, I'm the original prepper known as Adam Curry.
And from Northern Silicon Valley, where I can hear every other word there from the old Bonaire, I'm John C. Dvorak.
It's Crackpot and Buzzkill in the morning.
Hey, you don't need more than every other word. That's enough. That's fine.
Well, you're right about that.
Did you tweet? Did you let everyone know that we're on the air, that we're live, that we're doing something here?
No.
Would you please do that? That's kind of...
I'll do that as we go along,
yes. Kind of critical. In the morning, John, from the tropical island known as Bonaire.
It's raining here.
Yeah, it's going to rain here later, too. It's been... Sorry?
So in the morning to you, and in the morning to all ships at sea, which may be running into your island and boots on the ground, which may be invading your island and feet in the air, which is you.
Actually, the ships and the boots go hand in hand. There's military cruisers patrolling the island here. For those of you who don't know where this is, we were here, actually it was August of 2010 last time we were in Bonaire. Miss Mickey and I had a nice invitation from Lex Luthor and the Iranian princess to come and visit and stay here. And so I'm actually these houses are all wide open, so I'm actually out in the open. They're having lunch. They don't care about the show. You can hear them in the background, but you also hear the I'm actually looking out over the water here. You can hear the birds. There's some parrots who might perk up in a minute, but most importantly, the wind is blowing quite heavily, and we'll probably see some rain before the end of the show. But anyway, nice to see everyone in the chat room there. NoAgendaStream.com, NoAgendaChat.net. Thank you all very much for showing up, showing your love. Are you doing your taxes?
I'm typing up your Twitter thing you wanted me to do.
Oh, okay. And, yeah, so it's interesting. You know, we were here, about almost a year and a half ago. And since that
has
time,
the place changed?
Yes, the place has changed. Now, you'll recall that 2011, January 1st, 2011, the Dutch government basically turned this place into like a province or something. And so now, in an island of 15,000 inhabitants, they have 600 government workers now living here. Hello?
I lost what you said. I heard it was Dutch inhabitants, and then it was nothing.
No, I said on an island of 15,000 inhabitants, they have 600 government workers now here, all flowing in from the Netherlands and all running the show. And it's running great.
Except for their web connection.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. So, first of all, taxes have tripled in property. They now have new property taxes, so everyone's paying three times as much in property taxes. But they've dug up the entire island to connect fiber and a sewer system, which is now being put in but will never be connected.
What?
Yeah. So here's how it works. Well, because the government... Now, check this out. The European Union gave the island of Bonaire 28 million euros to upgrade their infrastructure. So some contractor, you know, got the contract, and he's putting in sewer pipes, and he's putting in the fiber. But if anyone wants to connect to the sewer system or the fiber, they have to pay for that themselves.
Huh. So has anyone paid for it?
No, of course not. No one's going to do that. They use their septic tanks. You know, they poop in the ocean. And why would anyone pay for a fiber connection when you've got this great connection already?
Well, I think if I was there, I'd hook to that fiber. I'd be all me.
Yeah, but you also have to connect it somewhere else. See, the fiber is just in the ground here. It's not connected to anything outside of the island.
Oh, there's no head end.
No, there's no internet service
provider.
Fiber. Yeah, exactly.
Hey, it takes a lot more than just dropping a bunch of fiber in the dirt and thinking that's going to do something. It's not magic.
Well, yeah, that's the whole point. But you know, but luckily there's 600 government workers here to oversee the festivities and all as well. But that's not the real issue. There's two problems that have really cropped up here. One is they now have cruise ships docking every single day, which really, of course, ruins everything because these, you know, and I'm on the inside track here. Everyone hates it because the people who come off the cruise ship, all they do is they just come on land. You know, they don't eat anything in the restaurants because they get the free food on the ship, and they don't buy anything. They go into shops and they steal stuff.
Huh.
Yeah.
What do they steal?
And you know, souvenirs. You know, they're like doing flash mobs. You know, like, hey, this is a very nice shop. And then, you know, they don't buy anything. They just steal stuff. They slip it into their pocket and they get on the ship and they're gone.
Huh.
But the real issue.
So you're saying that the people that take these cruise ships are all a bunch of petty thieves.
Yes, a-holes. Total douchebags. But the worst thing is, we have not seen Hugo Chavez's homebrewed beer, Polar Beer, in about 4 weeks. Shipments have stopped, so now there's a real panic.
Well, this is fascinating.
Well, so, not really, but it's...
I was trying to say the same thing, yeah.
I'm just kidding.
I was hoping you'd have something, some good anecdote.
Well, that's...
Let me, just as an aside, I just had this sick situation on Twitter. I just put the Twitter thing up, so you should have at least two more people listening.
Okay.
So I go this, you know, it says similar to, and it recommends that you go, you know, for other people.
Follow somebody, yeah?
Yeah, follow this guy. So it says Soupy Sales.
He's dead.
That's what I said to myself. So I click on it, and it's all his tweets up to his death.
Cool.
His last tweet is 16 March 2009. He died in October. And so you read this, it's kind of like a sick, it's like a apparently he was on Twitter and he was making wise remarks up to the end.
Yeah.
And about, you know, some of his different friends and slamming people left and right. And lots of stuff about Meredith McRae. I guess he had a crush on her.
Yeah.
And then he drops dead. But why, you know, I wonder how much, you know, kind of dead zone stuff is going to be on Twitter over time. I mean, is there Joe Paterno's tweets on here too forever?
Well,
he died this morning.
Yeah, I know. Let's hear the clip.
There's a statue of the famed coach outside Penn State's Beaver Stadium. To say Paterno is a beloved figure in State College is an understatement. Paterno's program always had a squeaky clean image, avoiding any major scandals that involved other schools. But Penn State was thrown into turmoil following the charges levied against Sandusky in November of 2011. Upon his firing, students rallied outside of Paterno's home. The longtime Penn State coach injured his pelvis and right shoulder in August of 2011 after getting blindsided accidentally by a receiver during preseason practice. Just weeks before he turned 85, it was announced Paterno was being treated for lung cancer. He would also break his pelvis again in a fall at home.
So,
Steve Carman.
So very, very interesting when I heard the summary of what has happened to this guy ever since this scandal came out. Of course, this is all revolving around the Pedo Bear Foundation 2 Mile, run by Sandusky. And it seems pretty clear to me, John, that the guy got a couple warnings. You know, it's like, you know, like the mob usually does, break your pelvis, throw you down the stairs. Oh, sorry, the defensive lineman ran into you. And then now he's dead. And, of course, you'll probably be invited to follow him on Twitter, but dead men can't talk, that's for sure.
Yeah, no. Well, Soupy Sales did have a couple of last one-liners in here. I might as well read him his last tweets.
I don't care about that.
Happy 2009, kids. Uncle Soup's kicking around for another year, which is six more than I can say for that prick Buddy Hackett.
All right. But
man, bad.
I'm thinking. I'm seriously thinking this was a very clear two to the head.
Yeah, I know you would think that, and I'm not going to argue it that it wasn't. It was just, yeah. Well, he never did speak up. He just said, hey, I did what I did.
Right.
I didn't see that he was going to speak up. I mean, you're making the assumption that he was close to talking and spilling the beans on this whole scam, whatever it was.
No, I'm not really making that assumption, but let's say that there would be an investigation, you know, then...
So why I take a chance? It's like the end of the movie. What movie was it? Casino.
Yeah.
Where they go around and they ask the mobster whether they should kill their best friend, who's the lawyer. And everyone says, nah, he's a good guy. Everyone says that. The guy at the very end says, why take the risk?
Yeah, exactly.
So they shoot him.
And I'm also in the mindset because there was more of that Ulsterman with the White House insider that came out, which I think we should talk about that a little bit later. Oh my God! I mean, I have to say, if this is disinfo, it's really good. But I am completely sucked into the conspiracy of the Obama administration not thinking twice about killing somebody.
I missed the beginning of that. What was this again? What conspiracy are we talking about?
Oh, we're talking about the White House insider, the Ulsterman report.
Oh, right. You're back on that. Okay.
Yeah. So I want to talk about that later because I did a lot of research. Because it's been really difficult. We left Friday evening at a midnight flight, and so you arrive in Bonaire at 6:30 in the morning. And the airport, by the way, you walk off the plane, everything's outside, it's completely open, and then you still have to wait 2 hours to get your frickin' bags, because two Continental flights arrived at the same time, one from Houston, one from Newark, and the same guys who offload the bags have to unload the bags to get and do the check-in to get the passengers out again. So it was horrible, it was very hard to get any research done, and everything is very slow. So, but I did follow up on a lot of that, so we got some stuff to talk about. And of course, I was not able to see the I'm sure riveting coverage of the GOP X Factor, but it looks like Newt Gingrich pulled it off.
Well, he had to. I mean, it was part of the original script.
Yeah.
That if you remember when this whole thing began. Yeah, we outlined the script, and I have some thoughts on this, by the way. We outlined the script, which was that Romney was going to be the final choice, but he was going to win New Hampshire, but then Perry was going to come in, and he was going to win South Carolina. Everybody talked about that before any of these elections, and then Iowa was up for grabs. Right. And so it's worked out perfectly, and then Perry comes along and steps in. He's essentially a loser. He can't be a candidate. He just had to quit, and so they still needed somebody to follow the script and win South Carolina besides Romney, because then it looked like it would be fixed if Romney won. So Gingrich was the perfect guy for that.
So do you think, in following along with my theory that Gingrich at least initially was financed by the Clintons, that maybe the Clintons helped do this, or do you think that it was clearly the news media. As I was leaving, it was all about Gingrich, and of course he did an awesome job, which I also believe was scripted, with John King opening up the latest elimination round on the reality show, with hammering him about his ex-wife and the open relationship, and he just blasted the media, and everyone loves him for that.
Right, and there was no reason for that to be the first question unless it was rigged for that exact purpose. It was all acting.
He was appalled.
He was appalled by the question. Why would you start a debate like this, sir?
Yo, I detest you. This is so wrong. Everyone loved that. Aaron Burnett. On some inside analysis, she said, she's a counsel on foreign relations shill. She says something very interesting.
And he really said, look, here's what it is. If I want to say something that's red is blue, I say it's blue. And people believe me because I'm passionate. And he actually said, and I mean, I saw that. I'm sure you saw it across the state yesterday. Women voters who said I was voting for Mitt Romney. And then I saw Newt. He came out and he fought. And I know I have skeletons in my closet. And I want someone who's going to fight and be strong. And I'm now Newt all the way. That sort of force and passion didn't
So what Aaron Burnett is saying is that when Newt says red is blue, people not only believe him, but women love him.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the narrative there is, what that's all about.
Well, I can tell you this.
The one thing that's come out of this is that this whole thing is rigged for one reason and one reason only. And I have a bunch of clips that kind of take us down this road.
All right.
This whole thing is scripted, and the whole idea came to me from Reverend Manning. I don't have his clip, unfortunately. I've been looking at some of these. It's a long story why I don't have it, but I'll just tell you in a nutshell what he said. And as soon as he said that, I said, yeah, it makes nothing but sense. Because one of the guys behind the script is Rush Limbaugh, who's making $400 million from Clear Channel, which is owned by Bain Capital.
Yes, correct.
So we have essentially Rush Limbaugh working for Mitt Romney, because there's still a connection between Bain Capital and Romney, which is typical of all these venture firms. Any of those types of firms, they have, once you're a member of the club, you're always a member. It's just like, it's almost like the CIA.
Yeah, like the mob.
It's very mobby-like. And so the idea is that, and I've got some interest, and I did some digging to find out, you know, that when the radio, when the rules were relaxed over
The deregulation.
Radio being owned by one company, that was during Clinton's administration, so there is a Clinton connection here. And you can start looking at the people behind Clear Channel and what they're involved with, including this group called the Robin Hood Foundation.
Uh-huh.
The Robin Hood Foundation, that's got people on the board, including the head of Clear Channel, Jeffrey Immelt.
Hello.
Daniel Oak from Oak Ziff. Gwyneth Paltrow, Harvey Weinstein, all Democrats.
Ah, how convenient.
And so if you dig a little further, you find that Clear Channel's done a deal with Fox, so all their talk shows are usually on a Fox affiliate around the country on the radio, Fox Radio Network. And they also did a deal, or Bain Capital did a deal with MSNBC, so they're all in bed together. And the goal here, because it's all media, and if you start looking at the clips, you start seeing some of this. The goal here is to keep this ball in the flying around as much as you can, so you can kick ass and take as much money as you can from the super PACs and everybody else, because you have to advertise, and that if all of a sudden this is a done deal and you don't have to advertise anymore, then the media companies don't get this huge payoff.
Right.
So what you'd run into, in fact, I've got a number of clips. I'm just play a few of them randomly. Every one of these guys on MSNBC and on Fox, and the MSNBC ones are more interesting. If you play Rachel Maddow on Money, you'll find that she not only talks about how you need more money, they need more money, she actually encourages, even though she's condemning it, but by condemning it, she encourages super PAC money coming in so it can go back to... Essentially, she gets paid out of this.
Money to win. You need to have enough money to win. And I think there's no question that if he wins tonight, Newt Gingrich is going to have enough money to compete all the way through these Super Tuesday states.
And, you know, today is, I should say, happy birthday to Citizens United. Citizens United turns two today. And that means that not only are we talking about money he can raise from individual people donating to his campaign, but his eccentric billionaire or some other eccentric billionaire who wants to come on and support him can donate a multi-million dollar chunk of change to his super PAC, as happened.
Wait a minute, did she just congratulate the advertiser? did she just say happy birthday to the, it's like saying happy birthday to August Bush the Fourth, one of our big Budweiser sponsors here, everybody. How you doing? What a douche.
So she's essentially, she's all against super PACs, but she's encouraging, if you read between the lines, she's encouraging the guys with all the money to
more money.
More money.
Do you know
so
that,
you list?
I was going to say that I had it in the show notes on the last episode. Rachel Maddow is the number one guest at the White House. She has visited the White House more than any other journalist.
Oh, interesting. It means something. We've discussed some elements of that. Now, here's Michael Powell, the head of the former RNC, Republican National Committee chairman, on money.
Thinking it starts with the money. Conservatives around the country will take a look at this race tonight, and they will respond on Sunday morning with going to his website and writing a check. And I think that's what Newt is counting on. And coming out of here strong with a 4 or 5 point edge over Romney.
I love this, John. You're nailing them now. You got it.
Now, we go back. Now we go over to Fox. Now, that was mostly MSN. That was all MSNBC. They're encouraging the money. But right. You go over to Fox, and they're a little more blatant about it. Here's Brett, their anchor, their news anchor, talking about the election. Brett on the Money Bomb.
On Paul, and that's continuing. But as you look, a lot of people ask, there are so few votes in, how can you make that call? Based on the exit poll data and the raw vote totals that are coming in, they're projecting that Newt Gingrich is going to win big. By the way, he just tweeted, thank you, South Carolina. Help me deliver the knockout punch in Florida. Join our money bomb and donate now. So you can see that money factoring into Florida already.
Yeah, and meantime, Mitt Romney's campaign, his senior agent.
This is great. These are awesome codes. I'm waiting for someone on Fox to go, show me the money, bitches. That's great. I love it. Perfect.
So they keep going on and on. I have one more. Ed Schwartz, who's really toned it down a lot because they finally got him under control, so he's delivering the right message. And Ed Schwartz, who's back on MSNBC, pretty much with the same message. You guys out there, this is just a big fight. You know, these guys, if you want your man, you better give him money.
I mean, and earlier today, you heard Mr. Pawlenty on this network talk about it's infrastructure, it's the long haul, and that's what Mitt Romney has been counting on all along. So if he's going to raise money, he's going to have to do it fast.
Right. Get that money to us. Quick, advertise. Go, go, go. Super PACs, go. Wow.
So the whole thing is, and Rush Limbaugh is the one who Manning went after, saying he's just a stooge for Clear Channel, because who else would get $400 million? This is not a mite. He's got more money in the bank than Romney does.
Yeah,
and he has got his marching orders. And it was Rush Limbaugh who first triggered the let's get Perry in there. He's the one who was setting up the scenarios, and he was way against Romney, but now he's really pro Romney. And he's the same guy, if you remember. Now, this is a guy supposed to be this big conservative, and he's all, you know, some conservative. He's got his private jet, but he's a conservative. And he's the guy who put the tinfoil hats on Ron Paul's pictures when he ever talks about Ron Paul on his website.
Right.
He's got tinfoil. Ron Paul, the only guy who's is probably the only genuine person in the whole race. I mean, he's honest. Nobody else seems to be. And this whole thing is corrupt. Ron Paul, luckily, is not fouling the works up because he's been marginalized to such extent. In fact, I was watching a local news show where they showed the debate, and they had framed the picture of the debaters to cut Ron Paul out of it on the far right. Yeah. That's why they put him on the edge, because then you could frame it with John King and then three guys and Paul out, which is like kind of the message. Well, now, the people, go on.
Well, I was going to say, it's so interesting, you know, with all these super PACs, and people have to understand that the rules change for this election, which, of course, you know, as you're demonstrating eloquently, was obvious that we all know that the money eventually goes to the media. I mean, weren't we reading in Advertising Age about 2 years ago how they were predicting a bonanza this year for advertising, and all the media networks were all excited about it, and, you know, the trade press has been talking about this for quite a while. Well, how come we're not getting any donations from super PACs?
Well, there's no reason for them to give us any money, because we're being honest about the situation and trying to tell these people not to donate anything.
Yeah.
And this is the reason why Romney should have been, you know, he is the chosen one, and he's the one that's in line to go next to the same way John McCain was.
Yeah.
But you can't, but the media gets screwed if that's a done deal right off the bat, because you've got to at least get to Super Tuesday, where I think 21 states all have the election on the same day, and that's where the money gets, that's where the real dump of, you know, $500 million gets thrown at the media, and they just haul it in and put those ads up, whatever the ads, they don't care about what the ads say, they just take the money. And once that's over with, then, you know, it'll be kind of done, and then the big national election takes place, where the money, the $1 billion that Obama has to be matched by $1 billion, and so that the media has just got to be drooling over this, and Clear Channel is obviously one of the schemers to keep this thing so they can milk every penny and dime out of it. So this will be a close election the whole time. You watch
when
the two guys
go ahead
start to fight, Romney and Obama. It's going to be close, 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 because that just encourages more and more media spending. This is just the most corrupt thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's interesting because that fits very well into the research I've been doing about the White House insider and all these people disappearing and dying and getting indicted surrounding the 2008 election. And one of the things that the White House insider talks about is about all that money, and the story kind of went away. Remember, there was all these questions about campaign finance for Obama coming from foreign countries, and there were bundlers who were apparently Americans living overseas, and they were, of course, only taking money from Americans. But it was all really cagey. It was like $300-400 million. You remember those stories, John?
Yeah, oh yeah, we talked about the possibility that all these single donations were actually big chunks of it was an elaborate scheme to like take a bunch of huge donations, then spread them out over nickel and dime it, and then bring it in through the internet and not being not traceable at that point.
Well, it was not only so. I looked into some of those, some of the research that was done, not by the mainstream media, of course, but by people like Pamela Geller, who runs AtlasShrugged.com. And it's really unbelievable when you look at all the research she's done. And I think what probably happened here and why the whole super PAC regulation came into play is they knew that this was too hot an issue. They couldn't do the whole money laundering and bring it through the internet anymore because people would be looking out for that. And they just said, well, screw it. Let's make a law that we can just have any money coming from anywhere. And we have no idea where the super PACs get their money from. That doesn't matter. So it's legal whitewashing with the same effect, advertising dollars. And as we know, that's how we choose our presidents in the United States, because it's not just the consumers who you know get indoctrinated, just like they're told to buy which car they like and which soup powder, but also you're going to get the most profitable spin, and you're going to get the nice scripts being executed by the media companies that are being paid.
Yeah, no, it's a media, government, industrial, military complex. I mean, it's unbelievable. I think academia has been kicked out of the picture, but it's just a complete fiasco. And Ron Paul, if nothing else, is when all is said and done, and people start to analyze what we witness, especially with the marginalization of Paul by the media. Yeah. In fact, I do have a clip. Uh-huh. I got the Ron Paul on Fox where he's with Neil Cavuto, and he's starting to bitch about something or about the media, and Cavuto's looking like, you can't see it on this clip obviously, but Cavuto's looking left and looking right, and they're yelling in his ear, and he cuts to a commercial, and that's the end of Ron Paul.
Where Ron Paul is right now. Congressman, good to have you.
Thank you, Neil. Good to be with you.
How important is this state for you?
Well, it's very important, but it's not do or die. You know, we expect to pick up some delegates as we have continued to do so, and we'll continue on.
You know, it's interesting. It is a proportional vote, and along the way, right, by proportional vote, even if you're second...
Wait a minute. What does that mean, John, proportional vote? What does that mean?
Well, that means if he gets 10% of the vote, he gets 10% of the delegates.
Yeah, but it's only like... we're not even at 1% of all delegates combined yet, are we? I mean, it's nothing.
No, but the point is, he picks up, no matter, he doesn't have to win to get a couple delegates.
Okay.
Or third, certainly nothing wrong with that. You've been very, very consistent. You could have amassed quite a few delegates, whether or not you get the nomination. And certainly you have a powerful voice. I know you obviously want that nomination. But let me ask you about this process and the extremes. You've seen the leaders go up and down. Now Iowa's been recertified to show Santorum won and not Romney. South Carolina, where Romney was winning, he might lose. What's going on within your party?
Well, I don't think the message is very clear. I have a very clear message, but I'm challenging the status quo. The rest of the candidates are part of the status quo.
All over the clip.
Seems to be happy.
I'm sorry. No, yeah, I'm sorry, John. Yeah, that's not on the air. You were just hearing me off the air.
Oh,
I'm sorry. Yeah,
okay.
I'll continue. Don't worry about it.
Because I don't see what difference they're going to make. So their numbers come and go, but if you look at ours, you know, there was one time, not too many months ago, they knew that we had a significant group of people that were interested in what I was doing and having a precise definition of what government should be doing. But the ceiling was always 8 or 9%. You know, yeah, he's doing okay, but there's a ceiling. But now the ceiling shifted to about 17 or 18%. Now they're conceding that, you know, it's over 20%. And if you include independents and Democrats, our percentages are much better. You know, not too long ago, there was a poll done where I was up against Obama, and I was equal to Romney in that. So
does it bug you, Congressman? I agree. I mean,
and Democrats.
You've been a remarkable phenomenon, but I always think you're like a sort of a thin Rodney Dangerfield. You don't get any results. Does that bug you?
Well, I think a lot of people think that. Certainly John Stewart thinks so. You know, this whole idea. I mean, if you look, somebody told me, you know, from this last debate, I thought I did rather well. And they went down the number of times they mentioned the other three candidates in the review of the debate. And it was, you know, like 80, 90 times, depending on which it was. I was mentioned one time in all the discussion of the debate after it was over.
Right.
Now, you might argue I didn't win, or some people argue that
I did. You had the juice.
But I deserve more than one mention on all the stations. Somebody went and added these all up.
Thank you, Congressman.
So what's going on here? You're in this media business.
Get him off! Shut him off! Cut the commercial! Go!
Oh, man. So while that clip was running, I'm sorry, the rain just started pouring down and I had people scrambling here trying to move my electrical wires a little bit out of the water's path. So,
oh yeah, so you don't get killed on the show.
You know, think about the donations. Speaking of which, why don't we thank our producers and then move on with the show?
We got a couple executive producers and one associate executive for this show 376. And I want to thank them. William Che in Douglastown, New York. Happy Chinese New Year, John and Adam. I'm giving you 337.76 worth of my love today. 168.88 is a number that represents prosperity and good fortune in Chinese. We have to put that on our list.
Oh, hold on a second. Hold on a second. That's important here. Hold on. There you go.
And 337.76 is twice that for the two of you. Can I get karma from my 102-year-old grandfather who injured his hips 2 years ago and has been living in rehab since then? Thanks.
You've got karma.
Very nice. Thank you for the love, both to us and the karma to your grandfather. Very nice.
And then out of your neck of the woods, Laredo, Texas, Nathan Rubio, 33333. Confessions, I'm a boner. I've wanted to donate for some time. I'm happy to include my first payment to my knighthood and some prototype rubs we are pondering. He sent me some.
Wait a minute. What's that?
Rubio Spice Guy.
Oh, this is beef okay. Rubs. Yes. Oh, cool. Rib rubs. Nice. Yeah, excellent.
If you wouldn't mind a shout-out to us, possibly need some karma. Thanks for everything. Let's try to get together in Austin for a cookout. He says, give him a karma.
Yeah, absolutely. Here you go.
You've got
I think you can
karma.
Most people can find Rubio. I said that the reason he's a listener, but I plugged his Rubio's rubs, spices, Rubio Spice Company, on Twitter. There's the basis of the lawsuit. Because I've used a lot of different rubs. I make my own too, but sometimes, you know, you're going to cook something, you don't feel like going through all the rigmarole. Somebody has a good one. And this is the best commercial one I've had ever.
So let me ask you a question. When you're going to rub one out, what do you use, John?
I use glycerin. Thomas Weiler in Oberdeichbach, Switzerland. Weiss, 211.20. In the morning, John and Adam from Gitmo Nation Fondue Cheese. Like to send a big shot of karma to Ron Paul and a MILF to me. Give him a double of those if you can.
Give him a double shot, absolutely.
MILF, that's one mother I like.
You've got karma.
With this donation, I'll become kind of a half a night. Last couple of shows were outstanding, by the way. I sent it $33 on June 29th for a podcast license, and it never showed up.
They don't show up. You go to your firstname.lastname.podcastlicense.com. When did he send it?
And there it is.
When did he send it?
It was meant to be a birthday present. Would you please send me one and put the 6/30/11 on it? Great hair. Love you, mean it. No homo.
That's a long story. Don't forget about it. Don't worry about that part. I'll look into it. I'll make sure we. But it's not a physical license. It's an actual online license. It's firstname.lastname.podcastlicense.com.
Yeah, we talked about it quite a bit. I'm surprised he didn't realize that. But anyway, so those are our two executive producers and one associate executive producer for show 376. I want to remind people to go to Dvorak.org/NA. Help us out. We need it. This is, for some reason, extremely slow month. Dvorak.org/NA, channeldvorak.com/NA, or noagendashow.com, or noagendanation.com. And you can click on the donation buttons on either one of those sites. And we could use all the help we can get.
Why? Because donating is love.
Yeah. Yes. It has been a slow month for some reason. And I'm not quite sure what's going on. People are saying they like the previous shows.
Yeah, when they listen to them, I think some people are still way behind in their listening.
Right.
Not sure what the deal is, but I'm not liking it.
No. And I will say that, you know, so here we are. Ms. Mickey and I have not been on vacation since we have been together, actually, for...
what about the Hot Pockets Cheese Tour?
It wasn't a vacation. We had a Hot Pockets Cheese Tour.
You went to Carlsbad Caverns. You went to...
Are you kidding me? That was work, man. That was real hard work. That didn't turn into any vacation. But here we are. We're doing the show. And, of course, people are all on the chat room like, hey, man, John's dropping out every fourth word. Yeah, duh. This is what we call a crisis situation, people. But here we are doing the show. And let me program your brain.
Dvorak.org/NA.
To continue, remember we have a lot of palindromes coming up, and we do appreciate that. You can also become a special episode producer, and all the love that you can give us is not only appreciated, but is necessary. Couple of PR associate mentions today. Hey Citizen, says Ash in the UK.
Hey Citizen.
And he has registered a domain name for us, which is pointing to noagendashow.com. The domain name, John, is thepoorwillpay.co.uk, which I think is nice. That, of course, refers to the situation in Euroland, but really all around these Gitmo nations when you think about it. And a very easy one. CitizenSquirrel.com. Of course, that is a combination of...
Squirrel! Hey, Citizen.
So, look forward to that, pointing to NoAgendaShow.com. And then something really interesting. There's a domain name called ReadNoAgenda.com. And this is set up by a producer who has developed... I think he's developed some software. And the software helps you transcribe programming. And so here's his note. Why support this? Number one, our friends in the deaf and hard of hearing community can now, quote, listen to No Agenda. Those who learn better by reading than by listening can now learn from No Agenda. Google and other search engines will return more No Agenda search results for current event search terms. Longtime listeners can deep link into podcasts without having online discussions, allowing potential new listeners to get a taste of the show who otherwise might not be aware of it, and increased donations as a side effect of increased reach, leading to more episodes of the quality we have come to expect, which I think is all very beautiful. And have you checked out the site, John? ReadNoAgenda.com? You see what's going
on
there?
No, I'm going to look at it right now.
Yeah, take a look, and you'll see that they've already started to transcribe episodes 373, I think, and 374. And they've got some software there, which I didn't have time to look at. But apparently, here's what he's saying on the page. If 30 human resources each spent 30 minutes transcribing each new episode, we could provide a full text transcript of each new episode, potentially within hours of when the audio is released. Please consider participating and helping build a team of loyal No Agenda transcriptionists. I like it.
No, that's a great idea if we can do it. I've always wanted to get these shows transcribed because it does have a lot of benefits, not the least of which is our ability to look up stuff.
Yeah, searchability is great.
Besides the red book, which is, you know, painful to look things up in.
Everybody else who doesn't want to help transcribe, you can always do something very important. You know what it is. Propagate the formula.
Our formula is this. We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
Shut up, slave.
The rain is now falling here in Bonaire.
Well, it's raining here, too, so we're both in the rain.
I
want to mention one last thing about the election, unless you're going to talk more about it later.
No, I do have a couple things. Go ahead.
I want to put a prediction in the book, which is that if Newt gets going too well, where he could actually get the nomination, either a scandal will hit, he'll have to quit, or something else out of the blue will come out and it'll knock him out of the race because it's he cannot be allowed to get the nomination. It's a done deal.
I think the scandal thing, that was very cleverly done. That was very well scripted. They knew exactly what they were doing. This was no mistake. As you pointed out, there was no reason to start off the debate with that question. His answer was prepared, ready to go. He fired out and he hammered it. He knew he would get Ron Paul along for the ride. And of course, Dr. Paul also called out the companies that run the media. And that wasn't in the script, obviously, but he knew he would get Ron Paul to say, yeah, that's right, this is bullshit. So I think they may be trying to dig up stuff from the past. Gary Johnson. Now, I don't know. Gary Johnson, governor of New Mexico, who was also running as a Republican, who was not let into the debates because they said he didn't have enough in the average polling or whatever, which I think actually was a lie. I think he probably did have enough, but they cut him out pretty soon. He was on the Knucklehead station there, MSNBC, and he brought something up which I think might possibly have legs, since Ron Paul has an opinion on the topic as well. This is about marijuana.
I have one issue with Gingrich. You know, in 1997... yes, it is. And
you're his best friend.
Yeah. In 1997, he proposed the death penalty for possession of marijuana in excess of 2 ounces with intent to distribute it.
Is that true?
Yes, from overseas, yes. And when asked about his own marijuana use, this is in 1997, when asked about his own marijuana use, he said, well, when I did it, it was cool.
That one could have legs.
Yeah, that's got lots of potential.
I had no idea. I haven't had time to verify this, but it doesn't matter. I like
it.
I
think testing a lot of possibilities, a lot of scenarios to take him out of the race if they have to. But they'd much rather keep it tight as long as they can to keep the money rolling in. So
possibly.
We'll see.
Possibly. And then there was some code which came in on, I think it was CNN, about Romney. Now, I don't know if it was intended as code or if it was just an idiot. Well, actually, I know the answer, of course. There's some idiot analyst. Listen to the words that he used.
Half their problem is they let Gingrich run loose. But Gingrich picked up a ball bat to defend himself. He wasn't even thinking about doing it. That they left lying on the table for a year. What is that ball bat? Gingrich says, look, it's how much change do you want in Washington? Do you want something big? Something strong like this? Romney hasn't done that. He's an incrementalist. He's come across as a tweaker.
Hello? Tweaker? You know what a tweaker is, don't you?
Well, you tell me.
Oh, it's a very popular term for people who are meth heads.
Oh, right.
And you know what? Looking at the guy, I'm like, yeah, he may be a tweaker.
Well, he could be. The way he rambles when they ask him a question he can't answer.
He's a total meth head.
Blah, 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 blah. But yeah, I'll bring my taxes in, I think, but by Wednesday, by Thursday, I don't know, maybe by April, but everyone else doesn't do it when they do it. They do it with they normally do it. The other candidates have done it, but I.
And then Rick Santorum, that lying sack of frothy mix, he says, no, my taxes are on my computer, so I don't know what it was. However, he then stumbles later and says, oh, it was a very unhappy check I had to write. So in other words, he already did his taxes, so he knows exactly what it is. He's a liar.
Oh, really?
You didn't catch that?
I missed that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he says, first he's like, it's on my computer at home, so when I get home, there's no one there. Hey, ever hear of a go-to PC? Idiot. They're like, no, okay, I can't get to my PC right now. It's on my computer. But then he says, yeah, I wrote a very unhappy check, so I know it was a lot. Well, then you know what it was. Look, if you're doing your taxes yourself and on your computer, which I don't know if that's true or not, and then you send the check, you know exactly what you wound up paying. It's a lie. Speaking of which, this little ditty which is not being discussed. The Internal Revenue Service has started a new project to upgrade their website. Now, I have to say, I did, for the first time, I did my taxes. The previous year, I went to H&R Block, which I think is quite easy, actually. And this year, I decided to do everything myself. And actually, I worked close with Mimi. your better half. And I was like, oh, this is interesting. And, you know, I had a couple questions, and I tried to look it up on the IRS.gov website. Have you ever looked at that piece of crap? Have you ever tried to find an answer on that thing?
Some years ago, I used it a couple of times.
It's horrible. It's actual, it's shambles. So they've decided they're going to upgrade the website. What do you think the budget is?
$8 million.
Oh, please guess again.
$80 million.
Please guess one last time.
$800 million.
Okay, you're a little, now you're just going crazy. $320 million to upgrade the IRS
website. That's got to include like buying a, that's got to include building a new IRS building.
It's here it is. The IRS's $320 million investment for its website includes new, more secure portals so taxpayers can access more information.
Like what?
Yeah, I don't know. More secure portals.
What do you need secure portals for? What do you... I mean, the reason... Okay, one of the things they want to do, they want people to file electronically.
Yeah.
So that's important. That
but you
that's
can already
secure,
do that. That already works. That already works.
So you don't need to spend money on that.
IRS.
So what's the other thing? What's the secure what for what?
Well, I'm reading from the article here.
If I want to get a form W-9 from the IRS, I just download it. How secure does that need to be?
IRS does not have concrete plans to define what additional online services the new website will ultimately provide and how much the services will cost. To their credit, IRS officials have begun developing a roadmap. Oh, I bet they'll have a dashboard with attack vectors. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, it'd be something corny.
Just unbelievable. So what they're saying is they receive... people aren't using the website. They use the phone system. And that they hate that. So apparently they answered over 22 million calls for the 2011 tax season at a cost of about $30 a call. It cost them $660 million, they say. What? Oh, and they're going to build an automated phone system as well, which is not included in the $320 million. They give more automated skip logic automated phone systems. Yeah, that's great.
Well, as long as the oversight committees, the Congress, are clueless about computer technology, this is going to continue. In fact, let's not to change the topic. I'm not really changing the topic, but I do want to play this clip, which exemplifies this. You know, the SOPA and PIPA thing were going on.
Ah,
and
yeah.
This was taken from the Jon Stewart show. Mel Watt, one of the congressmen, makes the following commentary.
From my perspective, just as an old country boy, and, you know, this is the only way I can understand this complex stuff. We need parallels in the virtual world to what we have in the real world. And I think this bill draws the appropriate balance.
You have no f***ing idea what this thing's about. You really just, you said you don't understand the conversation. You said before. I wouldn't worry about it. You don't have to think about it too much. You're only the ranking member of the Intellectual Property Subcommittee.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk about this for a second.
He's the ranking member, and he doesn't know anything.
Okay, so I have
who
some...
Who votes these idiots into office time and again?
Let me think. That would be the public, John?
The public.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, very interesting... The day after, and I believe that this originally was scripted to happen the day before or day of the actual scheduled hearing on the 18th of January.
Yeah, a lot of people were commenting on the coincident timing of the bust of .com, the mega upload guy.
Yeah, now, there was no coincidence there. So we have megaupload.com who the whole operation was indicted, and of course, in perfect retaliation, which I also immediately am led to believe is scripted, and I'll get to why in a second. We had Anonymous go and attack the websites of the Justice Department, the MPAA, the RIAA,
and God knows we all want to hit that MPAA site, and so disappointed that when I will go to the MPAA site, it was taken down because it's so popular.
Well, I will say
what's even on that site?
I was trying to get to justice.gov, and I could not get to it for a good hour or so. And I was disappointed, but I finally got it because I wanted to read the 72-page indictment that Justice Department also immediately posted to see what exactly was going on. So I have an analysis of that if you're interested in listening.
The thing I want to mention a bit, do you think if you're talking about the whole thing being scripted, do you think that shutting down this and that, and maybe shutting down justice.gov was done to keep people from getting a hold of the indictment?
Could have been. It almost discouraged me. I mean, I was like, I forgot about it. And it's like, oh, I got to go back and read that thing. But, you know, they didn't have to put it up in the first place. I don't know if there's some regulation that they have to put the indictments up. A couple of things. Okay, so the entire case is based on all this internal email communication that they have amongst the members, mainly the Dutch guy. And he's, you know, based upon this email communication, they know fully well that there was illegal content on the servers. They were helping customers who couldn't get a hold of it. And it's, you know, there's names, titles, all this stuff in here. So a couple things right off the bat. Is this guy an idiot, this Dutch guy? Is he a total, complete nincompoop? What are you using, Gmail? And why don't you just CC the Justice Department, you numbskull? I mean, that was literally, you know, with all this money. And, of course, what these guys were doing, they had
What about the possibility the Dutch guy was a mole just put in there for that purpose?
I'm going to get to this. So I'm reading through all this. I'm like, okay, this is unbelievable. But it's not just him. It's Kim.com would send off emails saying, hey, this customer can't see the latest episode of Bones or whatever. And, the real reason these guys got busted, according to this document, is because they had set up their own advertising network, and they would get money from advertising on all the search sites, right? So, well, if you searched for, let's say, The Artist, you wouldn't find a search result anywhere which pointed directly to any of the megaupload.com sites. But if you were an affiliate, because they had a very sophisticated affiliate model in place, you would get their links, and they ran the ads on those sites. So that's obviously racketeering. There's no way around it if that is all true. And, you know, they claim to be hiding behind the DMCA regulation, but that, you know, they had a tool that they would let the license holders use, but they had limitations. You can only remove 5,000 videos a day. Meanwhile, these guys were, and this is all in the emails as well, were downloading YouTube videos one for one. They pretty much had 30% of YouTube mirrored, and were trying to get to 100% because this was kind of the legal side of their business, which, by the way, is also pure theft. So I'm reading through all this. I'm like, wow,
stop for a second. These emails, these very indefensible emails, none of them were originally encrypted or anything with some heavy-duty encryption so they could have a conversation without discovery problems?
No, that's what I'm saying. That's the first thing I'm looking at. I'm like, this makes no sense. If you're running an outfit like that, why are you going to have...
You're encrypting.
Yeah, of course you're. I encrypt for this stupid little show. Are you kidding me?
Right, and you get nothing.
Yeah. I get nothing. No damning evidence. But then there's like this. This is the funniest thing. So I'm reading through this. You don't have to go to justice.gov to get this thing. And it says here, in part, copies of copyright infringing works were downloaded by agents of the Federal Bureau of Investigations and other participating federal agencies from the National Intellectual Property Rights Coordination Center in Arlington, Virginia, from computer services controlled by the mega conspiracy. This is what they call it, the short name in the document. Instead of saying mega upload and the defendants, they just called it the mega conspiracy, which I think is also kind of funny. That's a line for the news media who read this stuff. If they read this stuff, and I'm reading through this, and then there's also
My understanding was that was the parent company was named by .com as Mega Conspiracy Corporation.
No, that's that is incorrect.
Okay.
And then I'm reading through this, so there's all these emails here as an example, just one of them. October 18, 2007, Benko sent an email to Funder Kolk indicating, quote, "Sorry to bother you. If you have a second to find me some links for the Grand Archives band, I'd be very happy." On or about the same day, Funder Kolk responded with an email that contained a megaupload.com link to a Grand Archives music album with a statement, "That's all we have. Cheers, mate." I mean, all of this very, you know, just all the stuff out in the open. So clearly stupid. But then, check this out. They had these customers and affiliates who they were paying money to. Listen to where the guys were from. A resident, so their names are only initials in the document. P.A., a resident of Newport News, Virginia. Then we have C.B., a resident of Alexandria, Virginia. These are people who got paid money for propagating links. N.D., a resident of Falls Church, Virginia. N.A., there you go, a resident of Alexandria, Virginia. And then N.S., a resident of Fairfax, Virginia. So they would do it. If it's true, they had spies as their customers, and these guys didn't go like, "Hey, man, we got a lot of people we're sending money to from Virginia." Are they? I mean, how stupid can you be?
Well, maybe. I don't think everybody's quite aware of the Virginia connection.
Oh,
to, like, you know, dozens of agencies, intelligence agencies.
Okay,
except
all right.
We are.
Yeah, we're very aware of it. Now, here's what I'm going to submit to you. These guys were so blatant. This Kim.com with his hookers, his blow, his house, you know, all the spending and everything.
Have you seen that house, by the way?
Yeah, he had like 12 staff members. It was outrageous.
It's huge. It's got two tennis courts.
Let me tell you something. This whole operation, they were working for the feds. This whole thing is a PR campaign. That's why it was orchestrated in the manner that it was. And the clue is that Clinton's former attorney, Robert Bennett, will be representing the company in their fight against the feds. Come on. Stop insulting me. In 1994, 20 cops raided Dotcom's home, and he said, no, I like feeling like a spy. I was helping MCI in that particular case. These guys, this is the whole thing, John, is bullcrap. I think the whole thing is set up that they're going to Paraguay. They're not going to jail. These guys are working with the feds. This is a PR operation.
I'm not going to even come close to arguing against that, because it looked set up. There was no encryption. These guys weren't very sneaky. Dotcom was out. He was essentially a front man for publicity. That house, that crazy looking place in New Zealand, is outrageous. I mean, that place has got, it was just ridiculous. I mean, there's no way that they would have that. I mean, the place is obviously a safe house or something owned by the government. Who knows what that story be. I think if you look into the story behind that house, you may learn something. And then the whole thing looks fake. But so, when it was time to coincide with these bills, but these bills fell apart.
So they did it anyway. They had to do it.
Well, I think once these things get, you know, once the clock is running, they can't really stop it, because not everybody's in on what's really going on. They can't just pull the plug. Because you had a bunch of international stuff going on here, and it was just
think
too
about
hard
it.
To stop
just
it.
Just think about it. When you have cars with license plates that say guilty, God, all this is so blatant. And these guys loved it. They're living high on the hog. They knew that they were going to get busted. Like, screw it. You know, this is what we do. And they were encouraged to do this. By the way, this Robert Bennett guy, here he is. He represented Bill Clinton in his sexual harassment charges. He represented Enron against allegations of corporate fraud. He also represented Defense Secretary Clark Gifford and Caspar Weinberger. Come on, man. It's so obvious. Please. You're not fooling. Meanwhile, no one is talking about the fact that the Supreme Court just basically said, "Hey, Disney, you can have anything that's public domain. You can go and own that." No one's talking about that.
No. Curiously, the general counsel that we were talking about, the other show, our political show, the one of the guys at Clear Channel was a general counsel at Enron and a vice president.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of these. I mean, this is the same players on all these games that we have to witness.
It makes me very, very sad. And then we have Chris Dodd coming out. Chris Dodd, of course, was he a congressman or a senator, Chris Dodd?
I think he was a senator.
Senator,
let me look
right?
him up while you talk about it.
So he became a shill for Hollywood, and he's now threatening Hollywood if they don't want to play game and support Barack Obama. Here we go.
Make the false assumption this year that because we did it in years past, we're going to do it this year.
Former Senator Chris Dodd and content providers like News Corp, the parent company of Fox News, are pushing for anti-piracy legislation, known as SOPA, to protect copyrighted material. Tech companies charge its censorship, and when the White House expressed concerns last Saturday that appeared to tip in favor of them, Dodd was furious.
This industry is watching very carefully. Who's going to stand up for them when their job is at stake?
It's the mob, man. The mob is running everything. Like, we're gonna break your kneecap, son.
Yeah, but, no, that was a very controversial threat.
Yeah,
from Chris Dodd.
It is a threat.
He apparently called a bunch of people out and said, "Look, Hollywood gave you money. You better vote the way we tell you to." I mean, it's like open corruption.
And
you got money from these guys. You got essentially got a bribe.
Yeah. Now make good on your promise, bitches.
Yeah. And he called various people out. I mean, this is, if I was a senator, I would be very leery of taking any money from Hollywood.
So, oh yeah. Well, so if we just follow this all through, so this legislation comes up. They've got this whole plan already set now, and I agree with you that they probably weren't expecting the level of blackout and whatever, or maybe they were, but they had this whole thing in their back pocket. Everyone's coordinated. Of course, this is probably what ACTA is all about, this ability to coordinate amongst all of the multiple countries and extradition, etc. They have it all set up. They've got the lawyer in place to basically hook these guys up, and you know, and this is all set and good to go. They popped this thing the day after the legislation, which maybe was meant to pop on that day anyway. It probably was. So we'd have the debate, and then we'd have, oh, see, we clearly need this, but look how well everything's working. People would forget, because obviously we don't need any legislation because it works just fine. They were able to pop these guys. And meanwhile, we're actually seeing copyright law change before our very eyes, which is not even being discussed. And then the internet... If you look at Gitmo Nation East, here's how it's really going to happen. Here's how the real censorship comes into your life.
Last year, the government published an independent review of the commercialization and sexualization of childhood by Reg Bailey, the chief executive of the Mothers Union. It called for urgent action from the internet industry to better enable parents to filter what their children see online. And in response, the big four internet service providers, that's BT, TalkTalk, Virgin Media and Sky, have pledged to force new customers to make a choice when their service is installed or activated. Do they or do they not want adult content filtered out?
So this is how it's going to be done. And this is already taking place in Gitmo Nation East. Now it's for new customers, but pretty soon you'll have a questionnaire sent to your home. It'll say, do you want pornography? And if you say yes, then you get the still freely available internet.
No, you say yes, there's a knock on the door in Gitmo Nation East.
Well, but what's going to be filtered out of the porn-free version of Gitmo Nation East internet is going to be shows like this one. That's what's going to happen. They just start rigging. Who's running the filters? Please. This is how they do it. Once again, we're being duped. Everyone running around. And, of course, then the Anonymous, the whole beauty of Anonymous, of making up this group, whether it's made up, real, or whether it's a bunch of techno experts, is that there's no tracing it back to who actually did the action. It's probably Hillary Clinton sitting there in the freaking basement with her little goons doing this and calling themselves Anonymous.
Well, they're not. Once they turn to some of the anonymous people, supposedly have now turned their sights on the congressman who supported the bill and going after their sites, which makes a lot more sense to me.
Yeah,
because the congressmen are the guys that are behind this. It's not, you know, everybody. I mean, all these special interests people from Hollywood on, they have a special interest. They have a reason to do all this stuff. They're just greedy. But the congressmen buying into it and going along with the program are the people that should be voted out of office. They should be targeted as people that shouldn't be in there anymore. They should get rid of all of them. Everyone who supports these crazy things or is an idiot like Mel Watt who doesn't know anything, it's just dumb.
Yeah.
Why are these people voted in over and over? Just vote them out and put anyone in and then vote them out if they're no good. I don't get this attachment to these losers.
And by the way, I encourage you to go to the show notes today, 376.nashownotes.com, and listen to the entire 10-minute report from the BBC. Where they have all these psychologists talking about how porn is severely affecting children and they're growing up with abnormalities and they're getting all messed up because porn is doing it to them. This is what's going to change the internet fundamentally. And then on the back end...
Why is this... there's a secondary question here, which is kind of begs the question, which is why now on porn? I mean, you're claiming that it's just a smoke screen for what they really want to do, which is to filter out. We accidentally filtered out the No Agenda show.
Yeah.
Or we accidentally filtered out this guy. Or we're one of our political enemies.
Exactly.
Because we got a call. Somebody called us and said it was bad.
Well, here's what they're saying, John. What they're saying is that you used to have to suffer the embarrassment of going to buy a porn magazine. And that now it's so easy, you can sit alone in your room with your glycerin, as you say, and the kids are getting addicted to it, and they're having abnormal relationships. The whole report is fascinating to listen to.
Mm.
I'm not saying it's wrong, by the way. It might be true. It might be true that that porn is doing harm to some people. But so does coffee.
Well, porn has been out of control for such a long time. I mean, you know, if it was the XXX thing cropped up, they haven't forced anyone to go to that domain. That would make it easier.
They also mentioned that in the report about .xxx, so anything XXX will be filtered out. No, this is the setup, and we're going to adopt that model here as well. You watch. I mean, it's so easy. You only need four companies to do it, and it's done. And it'll be for new subscribers first. You have to choose, and then it'll be, hi, this is Comcast. Can I take your order? Yes. Do you want the porn version that might turn your kids into degenerates and ruin their lives? Or do you want the sanctioned, Disneyfied, free internet that is all beautiful and is censored for your protection? That's what it'll be. That's how it's going to happen. And all this other stuff is all theater.
Why did it take them so long to come up with this scheme?
Because they were too busy watching porn.
They're sick of it, finally.
Like, we need new porn. We need good porn. Get the porn industry on board with this, will you? This is no good, this stuff.
Yeah. It stinks. It's boring. Who are these women? That's what I always think. Who are these women? How come there's so many of them?
And how come they're not hanging out here?
Yeah, I never see any of these women.
Oh man. Anyway, so that's my take on it, and I'm really sticking to it. And we keep watching and keep evaluating stuff, and you'll see that bit by bit we'll find things come out. But I am calling these guys, every single one of them, shills, including this Kim.com guy. I mean, please. This thing they've been working on this for 5 years. And all of a sudden, the day after the so-called hearing, all of a sudden, pop, there it is, and the guy's getting defended by this attorney. No, sorry, I'm just not going to buy it. It's a setup. It's a good one. Well done. And maybe all of that is an actor.
Who knows? It was very well executed.
Yeah.
Okay, let's see. So I got something kind of interesting.
All right.
Here's a couple of things. Play the real news theme, and we'll go with that.
And now back to real news.
Okay, so I was listening to Entertainment Tonight, which has become ridiculous with slipping plugs for movies or TV shows into their news coverage to such an extreme they have two clips that they're long, but it's just like their plug-o-rama. Play news as movie plugs one.
Hold on. Now you're confusing me, John. Yeah, you just sent me something on Skype to do. I don't understand what that
is. No, that's for later.
Okay. Gotcha. Here we go.
In depth on the biggest entertainment stories from around the world.
The real-life Hollywood murder mystery drawing comparisons to Brad Pitt's movie 7. Hello, welcome to Entertainment Tonight. I'm Mark Steinis.
And hi, everybody. I'm Nancy O'Dell. The search is on for a killer who left his horrifying mark below the famous Hollywood sign, which in a strange twist is very close to Brad's home. And that is where our Christina McLarty is following the shocking case that seems ripped straight from a movie plot.
The gruesome discovery, a severed head found in a plastic bag. The location, this park in the Hollywood Hills, where Brad and Angelina often take their kids to play. Behind this gate is Brad and Angie's house. It's just blocks away from Bronson Canyon and the hiking trail that leads to the Hollywood sign. Police say on Tuesday around 2:30, a mother and a daughter stumbled upon a decapitated head wrapped in a plastic bag. Police say it appears it was a male in his 40s with salt and pepper hair, and he may be of Armenian descent.
It was set back from the trail in a place where most people don't go, in a bag under a bush. It was a Caucasian male, older. It was pretty cleanly severed. There was blood in his hair.
This scene is reminiscent of Pitt's 1995 film, 7, on DVD now.
On
his severed head was found steps away from the Batcave, which was seen in the 60s television series Batman. The park today is closed as the investigation continues. The crime scene is a popular shooting location, seen in numerous films, including Friends with Benefits, with Justin Timberlake and Mila Kunis sitting on top of the Hollywood sign. Now the question, was this a mob hit? The Huffington Post senior crime reporter David Lohr explains how this could be a real-life Sopranos situation.
Oh, man. Good catch, John. I'm so happy you somehow have time in your busy day between rubbing your meat to watch this bull crap. But obviously, and you know what? Still no picture of the head. Let me tell you something. If I'd found this head, I'd be standing there holding this head by the hair, and you'd be on your iPhone taking pictures of it, and we'd be rich. It's great. You know, and I think because, you know, the news report should be, have you seen this head? Does this head belong to you? This is fantastic. The whole thing is fake. It's just a promo. What is that? Is that all Paramount or something? I bet you it's all one movie company, too.
Now on DVD. That's my favorite one.
Yeah. Wow, that's unbelievable. Yeah, you know, of course, the cruise ship capsizing wasn't good enough.
Clip number two.
Oh, no. Time in water this temperature, it's unlikely that people could have survived, but everybody's holding out hope.
New footage of rescue divers in the ship wading through shoulder-deep water surrounded by dangling chandeliers and floating furniture. 23 people still missing. Tomorrow night on ABC, Chris hosts a special 2020 with heartbreaking stories of loss and survival. Chris, are people there in Italy talking about the similarities between the Concordia and the sinking of the Titanic?
Mark, many of the survivors we've talked to keep bringing up the Titanic, especially the scene when the ship has pitched and is starting to sink into the water, and they had to rush up to the top and hold on to the railing, looking over the precipice. We have people who did exactly that to survive on the Concordia. I don't know if you can tell behind me right now, but it's at such a steep angle that literally they're using mountain climbing equipment to climb up it. So the Titanic movie keeps coming up, but in the worst way.
And a new excuse from the captain. He is under house arrest and now telling prosecutors he didn't abandon ship, but tripped and fell into a lifeboat. This is crew members and passengers report that Captain Scatino ate dinner with a woman and was with her as the ship started listing. In April, ABC will run a new miniseries, Titanic, marking the 100th anniversary of the sinking of the ship. No clips yet, but ET has learned that David Calder will be the captain, Linus Roach and Geraldine Somerville playing key passengers. Could the Concordia tragedy come to the big screen? Matt Bellany of The Hollywood Reporter says the rumblings have started.
You have the, you know, the villain and the captain. You have a spectacular crash here. You have, you know, the very, very life or death situation. This could be a Hollywood movie in a second.
CBS News correspondent Alan Pizzi at the Sun. I asked him about the growing dangers there.
Alan, this scene is surreal. What's the biggest problem rescuers face?
This is like a scene from a movie, like actually, sharks. Because behind me you can probably see the Costa Concordia laid over on its side. It's
That's
wedged
good.
On a rock.
Ah, man, yeah. Well, I told you these guys are brazen. Please don't pay attention to the real mob going on here. The real mafia, which are threatening to kill each other as politicians. Please focus on this bull crap. It's perfect.
Hey, my favorite thing is the equating it. Just like the Titanic. It's nothing like the Titanic. No. It's a big boat that tipped over. It's sitting in the mud.
Oh, man. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, good catch. Yeah. Yeah. And people laugh at us when we say this, you know. But I got to say, good one. Good catch. Particularly that head, because when you know, I read that there was some. I was read this, there was some news organization.
I didn't know he's Armenian, by the way. I mean, what was the deal? I mean, there's a million Woody Allen Armenian jokes I could do about that, but I'm not going to do any of them.
No, it's bull crap. And there's no head. It's just not true. I bet you we'll never see it. There was some news outlet who claimed they have a picture, and they was asking $5,000. And no one wanted to buy it. And please.
No, buy the head.
That's a bargain. That's a deal. $5,000 is nothing these days for these so-called news outlets. They would do that in a heartbeat if they had the exclusive footage.
So they had the head.
They got the head. Yeah. Wow.
It was an actual head.
Oh, man.
So
that's funny.
I'm listening around. And I'm watching some. I guess it was a promotion for one of the playoff games or something, and then they slipped in this real short Ozzy Osbourne 15-second spot out of the blue, and it got right by me. Luckily, Buzzkill Jr. said, "Hey, what you got? You're missing this ludicrous commercial. See if you can even understand what he says, but play the Ozzy commercial."
Some offense. They come live for the AFC Championship Sunday on CBS.
Ozzy?
Yeah?
Do you have a secret fantasy?
Yes, I'd like to fly to New York for a colonoscopy.
Enter the CBS Cares Colonoscopy Sweepstakes. You could be our winner.
What? The CBS Colonoscopy Sweepstakes?
That's what it says. What, was it a joke? I didn't. There was no evidence that it was humor.
Wait a minute. CBS Colonoscopy
Sweepstakes.
Did you look it up?
No, I didn't bother. I was just, like, stunned. I figured you'd look it up and add to the intrigue.
Ozzy Osbourne giving one lucky fan a free colonoscopy. Well, it's another it's another pharma commercial. Oh, man. Let's see. 60 minutes.
Did these people have no shame?
No. Well, you know,
I have a fantasy. I want to fly to New York. And why would you go to New York for your colonoscopy? That's the last place I'd want to go.
Well, that's probably where the clinic is or whatever. It was something else that we saw. Let me see. Who? You know that, what's her name? The chef who came out and said, I have type 2 diabetes, Paula Deen.
Oh, yeah. A big old Paula. She's the one who, she deep fat fries butter.
Right. Well, guess what she's doing now? She's now doing a diabetes treatment commercial for Novo Nordisk's diabetes treatment, Victoza. Another whole promotion. First she comes out and says, oh, I have diabetes and, you know, I'm living with type 2 diabetes. And then literally she comes out after that with a commercial for diabetes medicine.
It's kind of tight timing, isn't it?
Yeah. I didn't clip the commercial because it was just so boring. But, you know, this is what it's resorted to, and people just eat that up. Meanwhile, I think our theory on two Obamas is starting to hold water, John. And let me tell you why. So the third installment of the Ulsterman Report's interview with the White House insider came out yesterday. And so this is the guy who first talks about how Kwame, what was his name?
Yeah, that guy.
Right, how he died of a mysterious heart attack in his he was 57, and how there was this whole thing with Feinstein and all this stuff. So I just want to continue in the saga because I really
well, maybe you should reiterate it a little bit because some people might not have heard your exposition.
Okay, so this Cam, who was a very he basically was the organizer for the 2008 Democratic Convention. This is a very well connected guy. Big
well
money
known.
Guy. Yeah, well known.
Big money guy.
And well and well loved. Yeah, bundler, everything. And he was running the whole show. And Obama's going through rehearsals. They literally, the Secret Security guys, Secret Service guys, have to almost carry him off stage because he's so out of it. And and Cam thought that the guy, you know, that Obama had eaten something bad or was, you know, puking or whatever. They take him into a room where there's all this Gregorian chanting going on, and then like half an hour later, first the makeup lady comes out with the makeup bag, and then he goes into this whole thing about how Obama is always completely caked with makeup, and then Obama comes out completely like bouncing all over the place. He's great. He looks fantastic. He looks like the Obama we love on television. There's a lot of rapid eye movement, which she said might have something to do with drugs. But the guy didn't even recognize him. The guy who was organizing the entire event, who had been introduced to him, you know, several times over the previous few days. And what the White House insider asserts to is that because Cam told several people, including Dianne Feinstein, Senator Feinstein, that they killed him for it and that he was telling too many people about this. Now, so to kill someone over, you know, the fact that they're drugging up a president, like, yeah, like, we know they're drugging up the president. I don't think that's a big deal. This is why my alarm bells are going. I'm saying, wait a minute, maybe there are two Obamas. Maybe, well, we'll get to the whole thing in a second, but maybe that's the real secret here, and that the makeup is obviously has to be used to keep kind of skin tone and color or whatever. And I'll get to that, why I think that's valid. So he, in his third installment, he goes in and he says, listen to what else happened. He says, you know, they didn't want to kill Feinstein, but it was so bad that she, do you remember what happened to her campaign funds? Do you remember this story?
Oh, right. They busted some woman here in the Bay Area who had apparently ripped off her and a bunch of other people, and so her campaign money was all gone.
Right. This is Kindy Durkee, a longtime Democratic campaign treasurer who actually managed the funds of, it's like hundreds of hundreds of campaigns. So she was, it's like, oh, she stole the $5 million. And this Kindy Durkee, interestingly enough, on just a couple weeks ago, a federal judge granted the request of Assistant U.S. Attorney John K. Vinson to delay a preliminary hearing that had been scheduled, and it will now be held on January 26th. So this woman hasn't even had her preliminary done yet. And she embezzled $5 million of Senator Feinstein's campaign. So that's fishy, to say the least, right? So that was that was kind of like the slam, like, oh yeah, really? Why? Because they can't go, you can't go around killing senators that easily. I mean, it can be done, but, you know, it's harder to do a heart attack on a woman. So here's the interesting bit, that Cam Kuwata, instead of, because we had a very important, and this is the insider mentions this, we had a very important race in 2010 for Attorney General of California. And it was Kamala Harris. Do you remember any of this?
Yeah, I do.
Kamala Harris against, who was the other one? Who else? Who was
the guy?
Steve Cooley.
Who was by far the more qualified?
Right.
Had a fast track to win. Kamala Harris was this miserable woman, black woman, who was the DA in San Francisco.
Asian. She's Asian. She's not black.
Okay. She's a mixed race, whatever some sort.
Right.
She is terrible. She's a terrible DA.
But why did they need her, John? They needed her because what is the job of the Attorney General? Besides dealing with crime and law enforcement, the Attorney General is also responsible for preparing titles and summaries for ballot initiatives, consumer rights, and other policies. The voting gets rigged by these people. That's why they needed
her in. There was a thesis floating around the Democratic and the Republican parties both that the main job they should load up attorney generals in all the states, because when you have a situation like what happened in Florida that got Bush elected, you need the attorney general in your party, because that's when you call on them. Because you, for one thing, you support them, you get them in there, and then now they're the stooges for the party. If needed, it's almost like they're almost like sleeper cells.
Exactly. And she was an Obama girl, 100% already sanctioned. She, because of course they wanted her in there, and Kam Kawada worked against her. He was so freaked out by what he had seen, which, you know, we don't really know what it was other than what was described, that he actually helped raise money for Steve Cooley to try and defeat her. After that election, he died. Right after that. And that's when we get the whole Feinstein thing, who then popped the news about Osama bin Laden, which the White House insider is saying that was a message, because she knows the real story. That the whole Osama bin Laden killing is bullcrap, and she knows what really went down. And this was the president's hero moment. So I'm thinking two things, John. I'm thinking, A, we've got the real Chicago mob, the real mob in the White House killing people, that this is not about a president being drugged up. But now think about the birth certificate. What if it's not about being born in Hawaii or Indonesia or anywhere else? What if it's the fact that there were twins? Think about that, man. Remember, we had the whole reason you came up with two Obamas is we had two swearing-in ceremonies of this president.
Right, one in there public were two ceremonies.
And one secret, with no press, no cameras, no nothing.
Yeah, and which has never been explained. Why would you have two swearing in ceremonies? And then we also started to notice a gray-haired Obama. They weren't doing a very good job of coordinating the two Obamas. So one was more gray hair than the other, and they, you know, once in a while his hair was longer, then it was shorter, and it was longer again. And so now it seems like they got the right makeup people whose lives are at risk.
And apparently, so one has a dark mole and one has a light mole next to his nose on the left side.
Yeah.
That's the key to look for.
Well, that's not going to be much of a key if they're using a lot of makeup.
Well, no. But anyway, so just to wrap this up, let me just quote from the insider, because it's very interesting. They said the follow-up was speaking about out before the president on the only real achievement the administration can try to claim as a victory, the bin Laden killing. This senator is the one to make the first announcement, not the president, and they chose to do so at the memorial for Kam. Is that coincidence? No. This senator was sending a message. They knew the real deal about bin Laden, or some of it. They knew enough to challenge, if backed into a corner, that they would. They would challenge the story the White House was going to come out with, the story that painted Barack Obama as a hero. The senator was telling the White House to back off. Because, of course, bin Laden, just another actor. Just another actor sitting there in his compound, which we know from our own producers that it's like a shamble of a shack, sitting there being protected by the Pakistanis. Please, everybody, turn your lights off. Yeah, because we need to light the set properly. This is unreal. So I'm just
loving
this.
And that's why
we
get the big bucks to do this show.
Yeah. I don't know about big bucks, but let me play this for a second.
Judy Woodruff, we'll see you online and again here tomorrow evening with Mark Shields and David Brooks, among others. Thank you and good night.
Major funding for the PBS NewsHour has been provided by our economy.
economy for 160 years. BNSF, the engine that connects us.
And by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live a healthy, productive life.
So I timed that ad. That was a 30-second spot. That music. 30 seconds of crappy music. Because they couldn't even produce a commercial.
No, they couldn't even say how evil. That's Burlington Northern, right? BNSF?
Yeah, that's and then, of course, you have Burlington Northern owned by your friend
Warren Buffett.
And followed right by a Bill Gates ad who's Buffett's best friend. So, okay, we know these guys have sold themselves down the river. We point it out all the time. And we try to tell people that this is the reason that we do our model the way it is. And we're going to thank some of our donors for this particular show.
Hold on a second.
I'm going to show my support by donating to No Agenda.
Show us some love,
everybody.
Imagine
all the people who could do that. Oh, yeah, that'd be fab.
Yeah, on No Agenda.
Donating is loving.
In the morning.
Mark Fusco in San Antonio, Texas, $133.70 from your future sommelier night. Really?
Oh, the karma donation. Nice.
Yeah, that'd be great. A karma donation for this week. Explain it later if it works. He needs karma.
Oh, okay. Hold on a second. Here we go.
You've got karma.
Adam, you need to try the Second Plus Congress Bar and Grill in San Antonio. It was this past week for lunch. Take John and have the Scurus Zoe Rose. Okay, we'll do that. Next time
I'm
in San Antonio.
All right, okay. Yeah.
Which is never. Robert Goshko.
I'll be there. I'll go to San Antone.
San Antone. Sir Robert Goshko in Sherwood Park, Alberta, 12121, which is a
palindrome.
In the morning, John and Adam, I received my night ring yesterday. Props to the shill for his ingenious shipping method to get through the international mail system. Keep up the good work. Best podcast in the universe. Can I get a karma shout out for the Northern Knights? Winner is here. And douchebag to the bone, or seeing he's a combination douchebag karma.
Douchebag. You've got karma.
Sir Robert, giving is loving, he says. Werner Bogula, or Borgula, Bogula, I think, in Hamburg, Deutschland, 12121 again. Hey, citizens. As a journalist trainer, I am planning a 4-week hot curry tour to India where I want to confront my students not only with the latest trends in drone journalism, but also with the best podcast in the universe. Why? Because if only 0.012% of 1.2 billion Indian citizens donate to the show, you too will be well off.
Yeah.
Yeah. As I said, the Indians are cheap. As I celebrate my birthday at 21.1.12, I donate 121.21, so give me magic number karma for my trip to karma country. On a birthday call-out, keep up the good work, donate is love, and love is the answer. Call out Jan Persiel as a douchebag.
Douchebag.
Why? Because he is as superstitious as me. He will certainly donate too, and he needs a karma for himself.
You've got karma.
Hamburg. Yo. Shoddy, and by the way, put him on the birthday list. He's not on it.
Okay. All right. Werner. Ah, yes.
Bogula, or Bogula?
Bogative.
I don't know. I thought Jan Persio did give us money.
That name rings true to me as well, but
he's going to have to straighten this out with a note. Shadi Hazazi in Orpington, Kent, $74. A karma and a birthday wish to my Fadi Redeemer Mansoor, celebrating a very special 37th birthday with family and the wonderful newborn twins Hala and Hana from Shadi.
You've got karma.
And when I say Indians are cheap, by the way, I mean that they're cheap in India.
I can pick up a couple of Indians for a little money? Is that what you're saying? Or I don't quite understand.
What I heard. Yap Yildghud in Weissenkirche.
Hold on a second. I don't have that on the list. Oh, here it is. Yap Geelhoed.
That's what I said.
In Weissenkirche.
$69.
Oh, that's a special humping karma.
That's the humping karma. Sir Michael Miller in Tiburon, who is seems to be helping more knights than anyone. $67 karma to all the knights. He needs a karma to the knights.
You've got karma.
Sean Zinsmeister, who means that sounds like a guy really like Zinfandel. He's a Zinmeister.
Oh.
San Francisco nuts. $66. Hey, citizen. I was recently let go at my startup company. Need a shot at karma to pick myself up off the mat. Hail the foot.
All right. I think we should do a hey, citizen karma for a second here.
Hey, citizen.
You've got karma.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's a new one.
I'm liking that.
Hey, citizen karma. That's right.
I'm liking that. That's going to be a request.
Yep.
Hey, citizen karma. Rory Bushka in Carmel, Indiana. Dear John and Adam, I'm taking the opportunity to show you guys the sincerest form of love, short of giving my life, by giving you some of my money in exchange for the value delivery each week. Thank you for working to shed light on the truth, which is the most noble human endeavor. I consider myself among the enlightened, so I'm doing my part to make sure others can hear. I give financially to my church for the same reason, and I think it makes just as much sense to give it to you guys. Double nickels on the dime from Rory.
Very nice. Thank you, Rory. Very appreciated.
And here's Jan Purcell right here in Hamburg.
Oh, there you go. So, wait a minute. First thing we got to do is de-douche the guy. Hold on a second.
You've been de-douched.
By the way, Jan Purcell, he's donated before. Anyway, it's worked out.
He's been de-douched. He's in good shape. Double nickels on a dime, value for value, and a birthday shout out to my friend Werner Bogula.
Okay.
Who celebrates his birthday on the 21st of February. Some car. Boy, Werner, you must feel really bad now.
Yeah, for sure.
You've got karma.
Yeah, Brian Grossa in Houston, Texas. Double nickels on the dime. It's way past time for me to quit being a boner and resume being a donor. Please send my wife Jennifer some karma for a job interview on Tuesday. And
hold on.
Yes.
You've got karma.
And then call out Nathaniel H. of Dallas and Chris S. of Boulder as douchebags.
Douchebag.
There you go. Thanks for producing the best podcast in the universe and encountering all the BS. Craig Steerly in Santa Monica, California comes in with 50. Robert Stokes, Alvarado, Texas comes in. We're getting a lot more Texas donors now that you're in Texas, by the way.
That's some of my homeboys. You know, they come in and they propagate.
From Alvarado, Texas. Here you go, guys. I wish I could do more. Go get something off the dollar menu on me. I couldn't get through the week without you. Donating is loving. Robert Fort Worth. He's in Fort Worth, actually, which is where all the money is, by the way, in Texas. $50.
Yeah.
Greg Tippett, Point Lonsdale, Victoria, Canada, I assume, $50. And Jason Fortun in Geneva, Illinois, a new donor with $50. And those are the people that helped us do show 376. We want to thank them and appreciate anyone who even gives lesser amounts and all the new subscribers, too. So go to Dvorak.org/NA, Dvorak.com/NA, NoAgendaNation.com, and NoAgendaShow.com to help us continue the effort that we put into this event.
Dvorak.org/NA.
Giving is loving at givingloving.com.
There you go. And I've been able to turn the noise gate on now since the wind has died down. So I think it makes the listening a little bit more pleasurable. So you don't have that. It's nice to hear the ocean for a little bit, but not for the whole time.
Yeah, okay.
All right. Anyway, let's take a look at the birthdays for a second.
I'd love to hear the ocean.
Oh, no agenda!
All right, so Shadi Hijazi congratulates Fadi Mansour, who turns 37. Jan Purcell congratulates his buddy, Werner Bogula. He celebrated yesterday on the 21st. Of course, you also get a card from your buddies here at the No Agenda Show. So, happy birthday, everybody.
It's your birthday, yeah.
And no knights to speak of, John. Nothing in the knighthood area today at all.
Well, we'll make up for that.
Yeah. I am very happy to announce in the second half of the show that, you know, how when it gets a little too hot under the heels for the elites, they always come out and announce stuff like, oh, yeah, no, we were planning that out along. Sure. Russia now in talks with the U.S. and Europe on plans to create a manned research base on the moon. There you go. Moon base is confirmed once again. Hate to say it.
Moon bases.
You can cross it off of the Red Book. I've always said there were moon bases up there. And now they're just going to say, we were planning. Yeah, we'll do a moon base. Bull crap. There's plenty of moon bases already. They're just trying to trick us. Yeah.
So I got a kind of an aside here.
All right.
So I guess he was at CES or giving a team keynote or something, but the idiot from eBay, the CEO, and I call him an idiot because just listen to this short clip and then imagine a world like this and then tell me how far you'd get.
Whether it's through voice or visual, walking down the street saying, boy, I like that person's shoes, let me snap a picture and see which retailers have shoes similar like that. And you laugh. The technology exists today to do this, and you're seeing more and more retailers and more technology providers making that possible. I like your tie. I'm going to take a picture of it. I'll find out where I can get it shipped home or what retailers around me have ties like that. An explosion of visual search and visual technologies through these devices.
Yeah, give them the hook. Can you imagine going down the street with a camera and then taking pictures of people's feet and not getting punched out?
You know what this is? Whenever I hear this...
What kind of an idiot is this guy? You know, hey, I'm just taking a picture of your feet, ma'am, because I was thinking of buying those same shoes for my wife.
No, this
is... Yeah, right.
This is very Silicon Valley. Whenever people are talking bullcrap, it's always about... Your refrigerator will know when your milk is about to go bad. It will automatically order from the grocer, and it'll show up on your doorstep automatically.
Yeah. Now, is that really all you can come up with?
You're going to snap up. Excuse me. I love those pumps, honey. Oh, excuse me, ma'am. I know my wife will look really hot in those, so do you mind if I just snap a picture?
Can you imagine this?
Douchebag.
They're ready to get slapped. And I don't want anyone taking pictures of my tie because they're going to quote unquote buy the tie. Hey, the tie has been out of service for 10 years. I wear old ties. How many ties can you buy? I mean, who's going to take a picture of someone's tie because you want to buy the tie? It's usually a red tie. I mean, you don't need to take a picture. Or can't you pick a tie? Can't you go to the store like a normal person, look at the ties available and say, you know, I like that tie. You know, why do you have to copy somebody who's wearing a tie because you like the tie they're wearing? Are you like Bill Gates copying Steve Jobs? Or you're just a complete moron. You can't buy a tie.
John C. Dvorak's pet peeve of the day.
There you go.
Exactly.
There you go.
Yep.
Hey, I forgot to tell you about our TSA experience in Houston.
Oh, what happened?
So we decided that instead of flying from Austin to Bonaire is only a 4-hour flight. So instead of flying from Austin to Houston and Houston down to Bonaire, we drive up, which I thought, it's like 3 hours if you put it all together. Flying.
You drove to Houston?
Yeah.
Yeah. You drove to Houston?
Yes.
Wow.
Well, it's only 3 hours. It was fun, you know. It was a midnight flight, so we're like, oh, we'll just drive, you know, whatever. It was actually quite nice. Isn't that nice roads? They got good roads between all over Texas. Yeah, with no income tax. How do they do it? I don't know. Amazing. So we're there early, and we're all checked in, and we're going to go through the TSA. And of course, they have the naked body scanner running. So we're all ready to opt out. And there's a real dickwad sitting behind the X-ray machine. So there's literally like two people besides us in line. And you know, then there's some guy in a wheelchair, and they, you know, they're giving him a hassle. And then, you know, he can't stand in the naked body. It was one of the older L3 models, you know, the cylindrical one that they used to have at San Francisco airport. So, you know, so the guy can't get in. So they're giving him a hassle. And then the douchebag behind the, behind the baggage X-ray, he's like, bag check. No one responds. It's like 20 guys doing nothing. Bag check. You know, and he's leaning over in his chair with his hands behind his head. So, you know, the belt is stopped. And so we're waiting for that. And for whatever reason, this is kind of our luck of the draw. After they went through the whole wheelchair thing with the guy, they decided only the magnometer. So we didn't have to opt out of that. But I was all ready to say, you know, and I was kind of looking forward to it. I was ready to say, hey, you know why I'm not going through that thing? Because they ordered dosimeters to figure out your cancer clusters. But anyway, I didn't get to do that, unfortunately. But the thing goes, my bag goes through, and I have the carry-on, which is the studio, right? So it's got in there microphone, wires, the big Behringer MIDI controller mixer, all of this stuff. And so this douchebag behind the X-ray machine, he's yelling down the line to all four people standing there, including Mickey, because I'd already gone through. All major electronics, take them out of your bag. All laptops, all major electronics. You know how they do that, right?
Yeah.
And Mickey says, how about my iPad? No, iPads are fine. So my bag goes through, and I've taken out my laptops. And then the guy goes, bag check, what's this? We got a major appliance in this one. And the guy says, what do you have in there? Do you have a big appliance? I say, yeah, it's a mixer. We said all big appliances have to go out. I'm like, the iPad is okay, but what's big? How big is it? Well, it's a mixer. It's a big appliance. And go look on the website and see if you can find the term big appliance. So I'm like, okay, this guy's a dick. Then Mickey puts her shoes through. Now, I talked to her about this. I'm allowed to talk about it, but I'm not allowed to make fun of it. So she has a leg difference. And I don't know if we've ever mentioned this on the show, but one leg is a little shorter than the other. And by the way, Mickey has extremely long legs. Very beautiful. But one of her legs is a little bit shorter, so she has a lift that she puts into her shoes. And recently, she had a new one made, because it turns out the one she's been using for years wasn't tall enough. And I was actually quite delighted, because I'm like, honey, why don't we just buy you one of those big, you know, the big black boot, the clumpy one, and then we can probably get one of those invalid stickers for the car. You know, so I'm like, come on, this is good. This is, you know, don't feel bad about it. And then, you know, all you have to do is once in a while.
Think of the free parking.
Exactly. So then and then, you know, we can probably get you a wheelchair to go through. We don't have to go through the naked body scanner. So, but think about it. All you have to do is once in a while, you have to wear the big clump foot. You know, it'd be kind of cool. You know, you know what I mean, John? The big black boot that's like 10 inches high. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, go on.
Yeah. So the guy says, whose shoes are these? Mickey's like, mine. Guy says, what's in them? And then, so this is embarrassing, right? Some a-hole. Say, well, I have a leg difference, and so I have a lift in there. And the guy says, yeah, well, we watched you walk, and we didn't notice anything when you were walking. Is that an ass or what?
What a jerk.
And then, you know, then they
should file a complaint with the TSA about this.
No, I really should, actually.
You should. No, totally should. You file a complaint. It's no problem figuring out who this guy is. I'm sure all the TSA people hate him, because I've worked with guys like this, and you don't like people that are like this. The guy's making it hard on everybody, and everybody hates everyone in the TSA because of him. He needs a complaint filed against him. He isn't, he for being, he's mean. He's not even following the guidelines. He's in violation of his own terms, his own contract.
Yeah. Now you're right. I'm going to tell, she's out now. I'm going to tell her that. I'm going to tell Mickey we're going to file a complaint. It was so insulting. You know, it's like, you know, women don't want to, you know, it's not like a thing that they feel good about.
Well, at least they didn't strip search her like they did with a grandma.
Yeah, well, who knows? But to say.
So Houston, so this is Houston. Is this the Love Airport or the main Houston International?
This is George Bush International Air, Intercontinental Airport, the Bush Airport. This guy to say, we were watching you walk. You didn't walk funny. Oh, she was upset. Now, come to think of it, I should have filed a complaint right on the spot. You're right. That was dumb. Anyway, let me get this guy a
douchebag.
Now, we're going to file a complaint. That's a good idea. I totally agree.
If they have a complaint process, and it gets put in his record, no matter what, they may not do anything, but it goes in his record. So when some hard ass supervisor wants to go after the guy, they got complaints about
they
you.
They got a record.
You
got
to complain about these TSA guys if they do anything out of the ordinary.
You're right. You're right. I messed that one up.
Believe me, it goes right in their file, and it will go down the road someday. And it'll pay off for you.
Yep.
The guy will be out.
You're right. You're right.
So I'm saying that to anybody in Houston. You probably, other people must have run into this clown.
Yeah. He has like short blonde hair, a real Nazi. Yeah, you'll notice him. GX2 made a little jingle for us for our white party at the Acropolis, which we now can rent for $2,000.
The White Party. The White Party at Ecropolis. Don't miss it.
I can just hear the jingle running.
Sounds
on.
Like that, or the drag race. Yes,
yeah, I can hear that running on Greek radio stations day and night. It's like, yeah, we're throwing this e-party over there at the Acropolis. We're calling it the Ecropolis, baby. Here, check it out, man. It's really cool. It's really like we're really gonna rock it, man. I love it. I think it's very cool. Hold on a second. Let me see if I can play it again. Wait, he also sent a second version. Hold on. Let's see what this one is.
The White Party. The White Party at Ecropolis. Don't miss it.
you go, GX2. So, there is some news from Euroland.
From where?
Euroland.
Oh?
Yeah. I guess the agreements, the talks broke down between the creditors, the hedge funds, i.e., and they left. So this is a new player on the scene, which I don't know too much about. The Institute of International Finance. I guess these are the guys who represent the private creditors. Left the table as they were negotiating with the IMF. This is about the 130 billion euro package that Greece needs. And they said, they left on Saturday and said, yeah, you know, we had long-standing personal appointments, so, you know, we'll see if we can come get back to you on Monday. So this is a tactic, obviously. They just got up and left. So looking more and more like there's going to be some real problems in Euroland.
Huh.
And
we're talking about problems. I was watching Al Jazeera. And they kind of just, of course, we're not talking about it much here in our news thing, but apparently the Islamists, just a quick news story, it took over Egypt.
Well, we weren't looking.
And Egyptians have spoken. Islamist parties dominate parliament with more than 70% of the seats.
Just that simple. 70%. Yeah.
That's all the news we got.
That's all we got.
Wait a minute, isn't that a huge deal? Isn't this the whole point is that Egypt was, you know, they were fighting for their freedom and Anderson Pooper was there on Tahrir Square and we were all taking care of business. It was all groovy,
yeah,
all great.
There's a Twitter and they cut off the internet. It was a big deal and all this other stuff. So who takes over? The Islamists. Which, yeah, of course, makes me wonder if they just wanted them to take over so they could create more havoc with Israel. I'm not sure what the deal is, but this is not what the American people expected from all this bull crap. But now that no one's talking about it, by the way.
No.
By the way, they showed in the thing, they showed all these guys, there was a big poster of all these different Islamists. They all had the same big beard. It was like a stereotype guys. It was like, it looked like a bunch of Taliban guys.
Like an FBI Most Wanted poster in the post office. That would it look like?
Yeah, only it was just beard, 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 beard.
I gotta love that.
What is with this beard thing?
It's a part of the religion, man. What do you mean? What is it with this
Some
beard?
Some Salafists has got to explain, or somebody who's not a Salafist, but one of the other guys, has to explain where this comes from, because I don't, you know, this like, you can't cut your beard. Is that, I didn't know that was in the Quran, but apparently it must be something, or it's somewhere.
It's interesting how, isn't that the same with Orthodox Jews? They also can't cut their beard? And
yeah, no, they're very much of this cut from the same cloth.
Huh. On opposite sides of the cloth, though.
Well, one wears black, all black, and the other one wears all white, so I guess maybe.
Yeah. Oh, check this out. So while I'm here on this shitty-ass connection, there's Miss Mickey on a speedboat. Hey, blow me! I can't believe that. They're rolling up in a speedboat here in front of the house. This is not okay.
Was she out skiing or what?
I don't know. But Lex Luthor, his Persian princess, and the Persian carpet guy, and Mickey on. Oh, man.
Well, wow. You wanted to be in the boat? You want to drive the boat?
Yeah, I'd love. Well, they're having fun on the boat.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Oh, so I did debrief the Persian princess a bit. I was saying, you know, hey, you know, do people in
right. This was the show you were going to give us a report about Iran, and the show's almost over, and you have yet to give us a report.
Well, I'm not waterboarding her, John. I'm just trying to get some information and casual conversation.
I thought you were waterboarding her.
I'm taking it easy with her. You know, I said, you know, is it, what is the deal? I mean, isn't Iran like all calling to young people who are all, you know, really cool and they're connected and they get it all? And said, yeah, that's absolutely true, but you have no idea what's really going on. And she, by the way, she may be a disinformant. I don't know. So here's the thing she was telling me, which I found kind of interesting. She says, so you have these young people and these kids will be watching YouTube videos, which they have perfect access to, by the way. And they'll go and cut their hair kind of in an American style or a European or whatever they find fashionable. But then when they're walking on the street, they have these vans and then guys will jump out of the van, will grab these kids, drag them into the van and then shave their head and say, and then make them agree to a statement that they will never do it again. And they have to prove it with their thumbprint on this statement.
What?
Yeah. And girls who have...
So there's a bunch of essentially enforcement vigilantes. This was taking place in Afghanistan during the Taliban era.
Yeah.
And they would, at least they're short of throwing acid in their face.
Right.
So they grab them if the girl's got a nice hairdo.
Well, she was talking about the boys. If the girls, for instance...
Oh, the boys. If boys can't have a haircut or what?
No, they can't have a Western-looking haircut. Then they grab them. They grab them into the bus. They shave their head. I don't know if they shave it completely bald or crew cut. But then they make them sign a statement. They'll never do it again. And they have to sign this. You know, it's almost like they almost have to sign it in blood. But instead, they have to put their thumbprint on the document that says they were apprehended and they'll never do it again.
Well, who's behind these abductions?
I don't know, the regime. I mean, for girls, they do the same thing. If you have a lock of hair showing from underneath your scarf, or what, burqa, I guess, or if your skirt or dress is too short, they do the same thing. But what's interesting is the thumbprint thing, and that goes on your file, that goes on your record. And that's about all I have right now.
Well, that's pretty bad.
Yeah. No, it's not. It doesn't
I'm
sound fun.
I'm surprised the Persians put up with this stuff.
This is what I'm trying to get out of her. I'm like, you know, so are you guys putting up with that? Are you going to, you know? So I think the message that she's giving me is it's not great over there, but, you know, that's their problem as far as I'm concerned. I don't think we should be, bombing anything to go and save them from the haircut. You know, they've got to have their own revolution, right?
Well, as long as Western stuff is creeping in, although I would say within the next few years we're going to see all the internets are going to be firewalled off from each other. There won't be an internet anymore. No one's going to care. I've said this. I've said it before. I'll say it again. We'll have a national internet in the United States, and Iran will have one. Everyone will have one, and it'll be walled off. Except if you're an academic or if you know what you're doing, sure, you can get to the Chinese websites if you want to. But generally speaking, the average American, if you walled off the internet tomorrow, so you could not really get out of the country, people could still get to Amazon. They could still read the New York Times. They could still look at YouTube videos of cats.
Facebook.
And Facebook, exactly, and Twitter, and they could still go to Hulu. Yeah. So they would not care one bit.
Yeah, and it'll be introduced as the porn-free internet. We now have the model. By the way, breaking news, first unofficial referendum for Croatia. 67% voted for entrance into the EU. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, well, that's no surprise. Yeah.
Anyway, let me get back to the EU for a second. There's a fantastic journalist in Ireland. And I think Vincent Brown is his name. And this is a little bit longer clip, but it's well worth listening to. So there's a press conference by some European Central Bank spokeshole, and who, by the way, has his deputy spokeshole sitting next to him, some woman who, you'll hear her in the clip. And so this Vincent Brown, so the ECB guy, he goes off on this long tangent, which I'm not going to play for you. Like, this was so great. You know, I took a cab from the airport and my taxi driver, he's so aware and he so understands the situation. He really gets it. And boy, you Irish people are so great. And then this Vincent Brown, this journalist who has I think he's on TV in Ireland. He's an older gentleman, which means, he's probably being portrayed as a kook. It's time for him to ask a question, and he basically says, okay, so did this cab driver at all talk to you about the fact that we're being forced into austerity and that we are now being overtaxed and this huge burden is being put on us to bail out failed banks? A valid question, right, John?
Yes.
Klaus Manisch, did your taxi driver tell you how the Irish people are bewildered that we are required to pay unguaranteed bondholders billions of euros for debts that the Irish people have no relation to or no bearing with, primarily to bail out or to ensure the solvency of European banks? And if your taxi driver asked you that question, or if the taxi driver had asked you that question, what would have been your response? That's my first question.
Now, listen to the douche knuckle. So immediately the woman grabs the mic.
Well, can we take a couple together? Can you ask the second question?
Well, my second question is a completely different issue, and okay. I may have a follow through if Mr. Masters doesn't answer the question in a way that would illuminate the taxi driver's understanding of all this. I would have a follow through question.
Right. Can I ask you then to pass the mic and we'll come back to you for the second question?
Shut up, slave. Pass the mic.
Well, if you don't mind. And that's a way of breaking up the exchange. And I would prefer if it went this way. We have a tradition in Irish journalism that we pursue issues, and that when somebody doesn't ask a question, we follow through on it. And I hope that tradition will be respected on this occasion. So could you ask the question?
So now they're whispering to each other, putting their hands over their mics, like, who is this kook? Who is this idiot? Why is he questioning our authority? How come you didn't set up this press conference properly? How'd you let this idiot in?
Answer the question.
Mr. Vincent, I have answered a very similar question of you. I think it was two reviews ago.
You addressed the question previously.
Yes. I answered it. I would say I can understand that this is a difficult decision to be made by the government, and there's no doubt about it, but there are different aspects of the problem to be balanced against each other, and I can understand that the government came to the view that all in all the costs for the Irish people, for the stability of the banking system, for the confidence in the banking system, of taking a certain action in this respect, which you were mentioning, could likely have been much bigger than the benefits for the taxpayer, which of course would have been there. So the financial sector would have been affected, the confidence of the financial sector would have been negatively affected, and I can understand that there was a difficult decision, but that the decision was taken in this direction.
That doesn't address the issue. We are required to pay in respect of a defunct bank. There's no bearing on the welfare of the Irish people at all. We're required to pay in respect of this defunct bank billions on unguaranteed bonds in order to ensure the health of European banks. Now, what would you explain? How would you explain that situation to the taxi driver that you talked about earlier?
I think I have addressed the question.
No, you haven't addressed the question, because you've referred to the viability of the Irish financial institutions. This financial institution I'm talking about is defunct. It's over, it's finished. Now, why are the Irish people required, under threat from the ECB, why are the Irish people required to pay billions to unguaranteed bondholders under threat to the ECB? You didn't answer the question the last time, so maybe you'd answer it this time.
Well, I think he doesn't have anything to add to what he's already said.
This isn't good enough. You people are intervening in this society, causing huge damage by requiring us to make payments, not for the benefit of anybody in Ireland, but for the benefit of European financial institutions. Now, could you explain why the Irish people are inflicted with this burden?
And he's cut off.
He's cut off.
End of story.
He's actually cut off right there.
Yeah. I love the German guy, though. I have addressed this question. It is clearly.
Oh, I like that. It's a PR woman that I get the kick out of.
Oh, yeah. She's like, could you just pass the mic? Just, you know, we're really tired of you. You ask this every single time. You're so annoying with the same question. You kook. Get out of here. This is what your journalist should be doing. This is what every blogger should be going to every, and whenever there's one of these, and I'm talking Gitmo Nation Europe now, Euroland. You've got to get into these press conferences and you've got to expose these guys. It really is unbelievable because he said it's very simple the way he's putting this. Like, we're bailing out failed banks for bondholders who just had a bad investment. And how come we have to pay for that?
Well, we from ECB are not going to answer your question. We are addressing your question, which is different from answering your question. So would you shut up, slave?
Yeah, it's pathetic.
Yeah, it really is. Let's close the door.
Well, you know, the Irish didn't want to be part of this scheme to begin with, and they got pushed into it, and now they
got screwed.
I don't know what to make. They got screwed.
Yeah.
They got some money left over, we'll take it.
The Euro.
And so we close our Euro segment for today's show. let me see. I don't think I had much left over other than... I know you have a couple other things left, but I don't know.
Yeah, there's nothing here that's critical.
What's
I do have...
Oh, I do have something I'll be working on that I'd like to mention. Remember the act known as the Enemy Expatriation Act?
Yeah.
This is part of the second part of the National Defense Authorization Act. Is like, you know, you got a problem with us black bagging American citizens? No problem. Here's how we're going to do it. If we find out you're an American citizen and you are supporting terror, then we're going to just take your passport away and you'll no longer be a citizen. So apparently there's a bill in the House and the Senate now, John. There's two bills. So this thing is moving forward, and I haven't read them yet, but you know I will be. I'll be ready for Thursday.
Okay. Well, it sounds like more fun.
Yes.
Hopefully we'll have more support, and I want to encourage people to help us here. Okay. Well, this is going to be our last. We have one more crummy quality broadcast coming from
Bonaire.
Boner.
Yeah.
Oh, Boner?
Yeah, Boner.
I thought it was Boner.
Yeah, Boner. It's Boner. Gitmo Nation Boner.
So you're in Boner.
Yeah.
And then after Thursday, when are you coming back?
We're flying back Saturday morning.
Oh, okay.
So the plane that flies in Saturday morning turns. And by the way, it'll be a 2-hour wait at this crummy airport just to get on board. I know how it happened last time. But anyway, I just want you all to know that I will be spending my vacation reading up on Enemy Expatriation Act, House Resolution 3166, and Senate Bill. What?
And make sure we mention who the sponsors of these bills are.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that'll be 1698. So I'll be printing those out since there's no real Wi-Fi to speak of here. And I shall be reading those for your listening pleasure on Thursday.
Okay. Well, it'll be interesting to see what that's all about.
So, everybody, thank you very much for hanging in there. John, thank you. I know that it's difficult from my end. I know it's even harder on your end because you probably are not only hearing every other word I say, but probably only half the clips I play, right?
It could be better.
Yeah. Anyway, we try. But this is the cheapest vacation I could get because I'm not paying for where I'm staying. And that's my motto, damn it. Coming to you.
I'm all for it.
Coming to you from Gitmo Nation Boner, just 60 clicks north of Alo Presidente, Hugo Chavez's lair. In the morning, everybody, I'm Adam Curry.
And from Northern Silicon Valley, where it's football day the rest of the day here in Northern Silicon Valley, I'm John C. Dvorak.
We will talk to you again on Thursday, right here on No Agenda.
Dvorak.org/NA.